After sitting listening to Art Blakey at 2 a.m., jazz is its own life form. It beats, it sways, it double tongues and staccatos across the senses. Jazz is its own spirit, and the spirit takes you into its arms and takes you to a late night coffee shop in the early hours of the following day. And when you finally sleep, you have saxophone dreams that let you sleep until noon. Greetings. Thanks for joining me on the ninth episode of Coffee Before Pants, a podcast for poets, writers, readers, social outcasts, and the overly caffeinated. I hinted in the last few episodes I want to expand the scope of the podcast to include features on music and film, and this is the start of that. Today I'm going to be talking and rambling about America's music, jazz, namely bebop. By the way, instead of ending the episode with the poem of the week, I decided to read you one of my own poems. I wrote that a few years ago. You can find that one and more on the website $3poetry.com. In no way you will ever hear me featuring or praising that corruption and bastardization of jazz known as smooth jazz. To appropriate a metaphor from the late James Randi, smooth jazz is as if you dipped a stick into the mildest and non-offensive jazz, took that stick to stir into a large lake, retrieve a bucket of water from that lake, and called it jazz. James Randi was referring to, by the way, homeopathic medicine, in case you were curious. And yes, this podcast is Kenny G Free Zone. My love for jazz goes way back to my late teens and early 20s. I majored, at first, at least, in radio and television at SIU at Carbondale. My academic advisor was a man named John Holmes, who hosted a Saturday night jazz show on WSIU-FM. That planted the seed. It gave me direction. I learned about the greats listening to John's show, Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Charles Mingus, Thelonious Monk, Dexter Gordon. Geographically speaking, Carbondale in general was a jazz desert with a scattering of oases. Now, this was before the internet. It was more laborious to discover new music. There were a few record stores, of course, but I didn't really know where to look. This general jazz ignorance led me to a short and disastrous stint at WIBD, SIU's cable radio. I was ill-prepared and woefully uneducated in jazz. But the love of jazz never really died, and today there is a plethora of sources for procuring music of all kinds. Over the years, since my time at SIU, I listened to as much jazz as I could. Every Sunday, you would find me at Pinchpenny Pub in Carbondale, where a local jazz quartet would perform. I also, in this course of events, discovered Jack Kerouac and the Beat Generation, where jazz was the ultimate in being hip. And at this time, I developed and honed my taste. I lean more towards saxophone, trumpet, even flute. Piano jazz doesn't stimulate me as much as those. And I admittedly really don't care for much vocal jazz, although there are a few exceptions. I do not consider myself an authority. There is still a lot to learn, and yet I am confident enough in my opinions today that I would like to offer a starter kit, if you will, a short list of jazz musicians that might hopefully be a launching point for the jazz curious. But first, of course, is the history lesson for the week. Coffee Before Culture, This Week in History. Special thanks to Alice Lalor for the lovely suggestion for the new name. January 7, 1891, American author Zora Neale Hurston was born in Notasuga, Alabama. Hurston's work was largely ignored until author Alice Walker published her article, In Search of Zora Neale Hurston, in News Magazine. Since then, she has become a fixture in American literature, particularly for her perspective from the African-American woman. January 7, 1928, William Peter Blatty, author of Exorcist and Twinkle Twinkle Killer Kane, also known as the Ninth Configuration after it was adapted into the film in 1980, also directed by Blatty, is born in New York. January 7, 1955, Marian Anderson becomes the first African-American to perform with the New York Metropolitan Opera, singing the role of Ulrika in Verdi's Un Ballo in Maschera. January 8, 1947, musician, actor, intergalactic being, and apparently voracious reader, David Bowie was born in Brixton, London. Bowie is considered one of the most influential recording artists of the 20th century. Sadly, Bowie died January 8, 2016, just 2 days after his 69th birthday. January 8, 1981, Chilean writer Isabel Allende wrote a letter to her dying grandfather, a letter that which would evolve into her first best-selling novel, The House of the Spirits. January 9, 1908, feminist philosopher and author Simone de Beauvoir was born in Paris, France. After her family's financial crisis following World War I, de Beauvoir learned to rely on her astounding intelligence to move forward. She not only wrote several award-winning novels, but became a household name in philosophy and feminism. January 10, 1776, Thomas Paine published his popular pamphlet, Common Sense, advocating for America's independence. Unlike many highbrow and poetic publications of the time, Paine wrote his essay in persuasive prose, ensuring that it could be read and understood by any literate person in the colonies. January 10, 1925, jazz drummer Max Roach was born in Newland, North Carolina. A pioneer of bebop, he worked in many other styles of music and is generally considered one of the most important drummers of history. He worked with many famous jazz musicians, including Clifford Brown, Coleman Hawkins, Dizzy Gillespie, Charlie Parker, Miles Davis, Duke Ellington, Thelonious Monk, Dinah Washington, Charles Mingus, Sonny Rollins, and Eric Dolphy. That is quite a litany. He was inducted into the Downbeat Hall of Fame in 1980 and the Modern Drummer Hall of Fame in 1992. January 10, 1927, Fritz Lang's silent film Metropolis premieres in Berlin at the UFA Palast AM Zoo, where the audience, including a critic from the Berliner Morgenpost, reacted to several of the film's most spectacular scenes with spontaneous applause. January 11, 1927, Louis B. Mayer, head of the MGM studio, announces the creation of the Academy Motion Picture Arts and Science. The first film to win a Best Picture Oscar was Wings, directed by William A. Wellman, and starred Clara Bow, The It Girl, Richard Arlen, and Charles Buddy Rogers. January 12, 1876, author Jack London was born in San Francisco, California. London led a life full of excitement, developing scurvy during the gold rush, working as a war correspondent, and becoming one of the first celebrity writers of America. January 12, 1941, Japanese author Haruki Murakami is born in Kyoto, Japan. His novels, essays, and short stories have been bestsellers in Japan and internationally, and his works translated into 50 languages and having sold millions of copies outside Japan. As I've said before, in some circles, he is known as the Kafka of Japan. It was one of my favorites. January 12th, 1966 marks the debut of, on ABC, of Batman, starring Adam West and Burt Ward, with a long list of guest stars, some of them playing villains, most of them playing villains. Most notable of these villains were the Joker, portrayed by Cesar Romero, the Riddler was Frank Gorshin, the Penguin, was Burgess Meredith, and Catwoman, played by Julie Newmar, and also Eartha Kitt for the series' third and final season. January 12, 2014, actor and director and writer Woody Allen received the Cecil B. DeMille Award for Lifetime Achievement at the 71st Annual Golden Globe Awards. January 13, 1832, Horatio Alger, one of the most popular American authors in the last 30 years of the 19th century, and perhaps the most socially influential writer of his generation, was born. January 13, 1898, French novelist Émile Zola published an open letter to French President Félix Faure in the newspaper L'Aurore. The letter was headlined J'accuse. In it, Zola accused President Faure and his government of anti-Semitism and its handling of the so-called Dreyfus Affair, in which a French general staff officer, Alfred Dreyfus, who was Jewish, was sentenced to a lifetime of penal servitude on Devil's Island for treason on little or no evidence. And finally, January 13, 1928, Swedish-American inventor E.F.W. Alexanderson of General Electric demonstrates the first television receiver at Proctor's Theater in Schenectady, New York. This also anticipates a slow and steady decline of cultural intelligence. As Groucho Marx said, I find television very educating. Every time somebody turns on the set, I go into the other room and read a book. So here are the albums in the starter kit. If you recall in the episode, a few episodes back, where I was talking about finding more nonfiction in your reading, I mentioned that in the back of many nonfiction books there is a bibliography or sometimes a for further reading section. This is where a reader can find more authors and more reading about a subject. Jazz albums are unique in their own way. They are their own further reading, but instead of it's further listening. Many of the personnel you hear mentioned tonight, as well as, of course, the headliner, are jumping points and finding more recordings. You like that saxophone on a particular album? Odds are that that musician has their own set of albums with their own sessions personnel. It's a rabbit hole, yes, but one you may very well be jumping into without regret. This is by no means a comprehensive list. That would defeat the purpose of being a starter list. I hope it's catalyst towards new worlds. Although most of these albums are of the bebop persuasion, I do take a couple detours toward avant-garde and fusion. I also might mention that I will have this list, I already have this list posted with links on my website, www.coffeebeforepants.com. The title of the post is the same as the name of this episode. So here's the album. Get ready. Drum roll, please. The first one that comes to mind is Kind of Blue by Miles Davis. Initial release, 1959. Personnel includes, of course, Miles Davis on trumpet, Julian Cannonball Adderley on alto sax, Bill Evans piano, Paul Chambers bass, Wynn Kelly piano, James Cobb drums, and John Coltrane on tenor sax. Monin, Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, one of my favorites. All of these are my favorites. If they weren't, I wouldn't be putting them on the list. Initial release, 1959. Personnel, Art Blakey, drums. Jaime Merritt, I hope I pronounced that correctly, on bass. Bobby Timmons on piano. Benny Golson on drums. And one of our favorites, Lee Morgan on trumpet. And here's an example of what I just said. Listening to this album always makes me happy. It's Cornbread by Lee Morgan, released in 1967 with Lee Morgan on trumpet, Jackie McLean on alto sax, Larry Ridley, bass, Hank Mobley, another great saxophone player, tenor sax, and Herbie Hancock on piano. I'm giving you this list with very little commentary. I want you to find out for yourself. I do say, you know, hey, this is my favorite, or I love this, but I don't go too far and too deep into too much detail. My next album suggestion is, this is one of the avant-garde detours, Journey to Satchidananda by Alice Coltrane. Initial release, 1971, with Alice Coltrane on harp and piano, Cecil McBee on bass, Majid Shabazz on bells, tambourine, Pharaoh Sanders, soprano saxophone, percussion, and Tulsi on the tambura. Bags and Train, Milt Jackson and John Coltrane. Initially released 1961 with Milt Jackson on vibraphone. I could listen to that all day. John Coltrane on tenor sax with Connie Kay on drums, Paul Chambers on bass, and Hank Jones on piano. Straight No Chaser, Thelonious Monk. Released in 1967 with Thelonious Monk on piano, of course, Larry Gates on bass, Charlie Roche on tenor saxophone, and Ben Riley on drums. It's another little more of a fusion album, Wildflower, Hubert Laws. First released 1972 with Hubert Laws on flute, Ron Carter on bass, as well as several other on strings. It was quite the ensemble. There's too many names and too many instruments to list. And then we have Song for My Father, Horace Silver, released in 1964, with Horace Silver on piano, Teddy Smith and Gene Taylor on bass, Roy Brooks on drums, Junior Cook, tenor saxophone, Lou Mitchell on trumpet. If you get a chance, listen carefully to the first few bars of the title track. Does it sound familiar? You'll come up with it. Silver was a big influence on quite a few recording artists. Blue Train, John Coltrane, initial release 1957. Personnel includes John Coltrane on tenor sax, Paul Chambers on bass, Philly Joe Jones on drums, Kenny Drew on piano, and guess who's on trumpet? Lee Morgan. Apparently, I wasn't even looking at this. John Coltrane shows up in a lot of these suggestions. He was a master saxophonist. The next album is Bird and Diz with John Coltrane and Dizzy Gillespie, released in 1952 with Charlie Parker on tenor saxophone, Dizzy Gillespie on trumpet, Thelonious Monk on piano, and Curly Russell on bass. Charles Mingus, released 1959 with Mingus on bass, John Handy on alto sax, Shafi Hadi on tenor sax, Horace Perlman on piano, Jimmy Knepper on trombone, among others. And I guess this is the end of the list. Portrait in Jazz, Bill Evans. Released 1960, this one has a fairly spare personnel list with Bill Evans on piano, Scott LaFaro on bass, Paul Motian on drums, I included this not only because Evans was a stellar pianist, but also it has one of my favorite jazz tracks, Autumn Leaves. Is there more? Of course. There's always more. This is just a slice, not the whole roast. Procure and listen to these albums, enjoy them, and then, well, happy explorations. I think that wraps it up for now. Thanks for listening, and again, be sure to check out the website for the links of these albums. If you like what you've heard tonight, please hit the like button, if there is one, on your podcast platform. No need for hammers or anything like that. Just use your finger or your mouse. I would love it if you follow the podcast, where you'll get notifications of new episodes and other happenings. Again, thanks. I hope you have a lovely day, and hope you find some good books, and of course some awesome jazz on your journey. Thank you. You have been listening to Coffee Before Pants. Have a great day.